Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. I didn't know that.
I didn't either.
If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. Interesting. Mm. That's why you need Robert Half. Yep. I don't think that's a person. That's the company.
Okay, I was confused.
Yeah, their specialized recruiting professionals engage with their proprietary AI. Welcome to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing, and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. See, at Robert Half, they know talent. I wish I had had Robert Half back in the day when I was hiring.
Okay.
So, no offense, Sona.
Oh, I feel like you did mean to offend me.
Yes, you wouldn't be here if I had had Robert Half. Okay. Visit RobertHalf.com today. Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend is sponsored by ADT. Introducing ADT self-setup, featuring everything from motion sensors to Google Nest cams and the Nest doorbell with a battery or wired option. Easily install the ADT self-setup security system at your convenience. This is so good because I can't set up anything.
I know, me neither.
And they've made it simple. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm terrible. I can't get an electric toothbrush to function properly.
Yeah, so easy even Conan O'Brien can do it.
That's what they should say from now on.
Yeah.
No heavy-duty tools are needed. And if you need help, ADT can provide virtual assistance along the way. Also features Nest cams that can tell the difference between a person, an animal, a vehicle, or with the Nest doorbell, even a package.
That's cool.
That's cool. Plus, when every second counts, you can trust ADT's 24/7 professional monitoring. Go to ADT.com today or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP. Google, Nest Cam, Nest Doorbell, and Nest Aware are trademarks of Google LLC.
Hi, my name is Dan Radcliffe, and I feel cautiously optimistic about being Conan O'Brien's friend, which is pretty much an attitude I take into every realm of life. So why should this be different?
Fall is here, hear the yell, back to school, ring the bell, brand new shoes, walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens, I can tell that we are gonna be friends. Yes, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. Great podcast lined up for you today. I like to think we always bring the goods. We always bring what pitchers call the high heat. You know, we don't throw junk. I don't throw knuckleballs.
Yeah.
High heat every time. Fastballs. 98 miles per hour on the radar.
Huh.
As you can tell, I love that people who aren't jocks.
Is this the high heat?
Yeah, what's happening?
People who aren't jocks always use jock analogies. Because it's their way of pretending they're jocks. That's my favorite thing.
Did you want to be a jock?
Oh, God. I knew very early on that was not the life for me. The first time someone threw me a ball, I knew I need to find something else quickly. I ran from the ball. They kept tossing me the ball and I would run from it every time.
You're just so tall. Like you would have been a good athlete.
No, they're not. People always said that when I was growing up. People always said, hey, you're 6'4". You know, you must be great at basketball. They're not related.
Okay.
You do need to have something called coordination. And you also have to have the desire to put the ball into the basket. And I'm going to say I have some coordination, but this is a true story. I used to play basketball with friends and, you know, not well, obviously, but I would play basketball with friends at this hoop that was near our house in Brookline, Mass. And we would start playing and I talked the whole game and I would pretend to be different people who had backstories.
Ugh.
And I remember so clearly my brother Luke just dropping his head because he just couldn't take it anymore. I was like, okay, now this guy was asked to leave the league for a while because he got really into black tar heroin. And he was on the lam for a while. He attacked a fan. But now he's back. You know, his name is Jack, you know, Jack, Jay, Jonas, you know, Jabbar. And I would talk and talk and talk. And people would be laughing for a while. And then they'd be like, you're not playing basketball at all. I used to take crazy shots that I had no chance of making, but shout out madness while I did it because I thought it was funny. And even Bob Odenkirk, he reminded me recently that when I used to shoot baskets with him, I would take my shirt, pull it up over my head, and I'd become the Phantom.
Oh, God.
And he was a guy who showed up at a basketball court and said, and Bob would play along and go, "Who are you?" And I'd say, "I'm the Phantom. And no one must ever know who I am." And then I would shoot baskets, but because I had a shirt over my head, I was terrible. And so the Phantom was absolutely awful. And Bob, playing along with us, always saying, "Phantom, if you took that shirt off your head, you might enjoy the game. You might actually make a basket and say, 'No one must ever know the name of the Phantom.'" And then I would toss the basketball as hard as I could, and it would go flying over the rim, you know, rolling Jesus. Into the next court. I only cared about that shit. And so for all of those reasons, the idea of earnestly trying in any way to do well in a sport. And my best creation was a guy named Doulon. And whenever I would play tennis, I would become Doulon. And Doulon was this Frenchman who was
You had a different persona for every sport.
Yes, I did. I'm not even kidding. I actually brought Doulon back recently, but I used to play with one of our line producers, Tracy King. I would play tennis with her, and this is in the 90s during the late night show, and we found this court, and we'd go up there, and we would just whack the ball back and forth. And I created this guy, Doulon, who's French, and obviously, and he has contempt for everybody, and he's very sexist. And so I'd be playing with Tracy King, and she would hit the ball to me, and if it went over the line, I'd be like, I would say, like, women, they should not play tennis. It is, you know, and she'd be, she'd be like saying, "Doulon, you can't say that anymore." And I'd say, I'm Doulon. And then every time I hit the ball, I'd go, "Doulon, Doulon,
oh, God,
Doulon, jeez. Doulon." Wow. And I cannot, and that was my idea of playing tennis. I didn't care where the ball went. I just wanted to be Doulon. And Doulon was a horrible, horrible human being. And whenever she kicked my ass, Doulon would say, like, "It is not possible. I'm Doulon. Doulon cannot be defeated by a woman." You know, it's just ridiculous. It was insanity. But that's my idea of playing sports. So height got me nothing because I was crippled by a foolish brain. So anyway.
They must have hated playing with you.
They hated playing with me. And as I'm learning later in life, I was routinely just hated in general. All right, let's move on. But the podcast is my chance to redeem myself. My guest today starred in the Harry Potter movies and has appeared on Broadway in such productions as Equus and How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. Now you can see him in the third season of the very funny TBS series Miracle Workers. I really love this man. I'm thrilled he's with us today. Daniel Radcliffe, welcome. There's so much to ask you about. First of all, I respect cautiously optimistic because that's just the right approach.
Yeah.
You know, you have people coming at you from all angles. You don't know what they want from you. You're a very famous person. So, yes, cautiously optimistic is fine. I also was struck that you call yourself Dan Radcliffe.
I guess so.
Everyone knows you as Daniel Radcliffe. And then,
yeah, I suppose so.
Have you always been Dan to your friends?
Yeah, I'm Dan. I don't mind Daniel. I'm like, I'm for anything but Danny. I am for some reason not a Danny. And like, if you introduce yourself to people in the UK, particularly as Danny, there's like a 50-50 chance that they will sing Danny Boy to you immediately.
Oh, Danny Boy, the pipes are calling.
I absolutely brought that on myself. But
you did.
Yeah.
But you didn't expect it as a Gregorian chant, did you?
But it's like, it's actually...
Poor Danny Boy.
It's a really beautiful song, but it's so sad. And then to hear it that often.
Yes.
So yeah, Dan or Daniel is fine, but like Daniel feels like formal weirdly. So yeah.
I also feel like if you're Danny, you have to wear a cap.
Mm.
You have to wear a tweed cap
right.
at all times.
Yeah.
And it has to be pushed back on your head. And you're like, Danny, you know, I mean, it's just what's required of you. So yeah. I think you did the right thing going with.
Yeah. No.
People have tried to nickname Conan and it doesn't break down into anything
no.
Smaller.
No, I mean, no. Like, the first thing that came into my head was nanny, and that doesn't work. Like,
no.
I like that.
And it's the same, and it's also the same length of syllable. And it's
we could try it if you want to try. I mean, Matt, you seem like you're eager to just call me
oh,
that.
Oh, nanny boy, the pipes.
Well, I'm delighted to have you on the show. You are a very funny and a very nice person. And I also have to say, you are, of all the guests I've talked to over the years, you're the one, and it's not your fault, but you make me feel very, very old. I think I was easily, you know, 12 years into my late night show when I had you on, and you were a little boy. And now here you are, and you've got this very impressive beard. I could not grow that beard without some sort of hormonal treatment. And you're one of those people that makes me think, what happened? I must be 80 years old. I met you, I think you were 14 or 13 when I met you.
Probably 13, yeah. I am that for a lot of people, I think, because I am just like,
yes.
I was introduced to the world as like an 11-year-old. And so when people now see me, mm-hmm. it's like, oh my God, what has happened? How much time can possibly have passed? And I now like, there are people that are that for me. Like there was a girl that was the daughter of the makeup artist on Harry Potter, was born basically just before we started the first film. And then like by the time we finished the film, she was a 10-year-old child. And then now she is an adult woman. And, you know, so I'm getting a sense of what that is like, but I am aware that I make people feel very old when I tell them I'm 30.
You know, it's also funny because you could have so much fun with people. You are, through no fault of your own, actually, just because you were a talented young man, you're cast in this role that became this benchmark for so many people, this generational benchmark. And so there are a lot of people like me that know you. I mean, and also you'll find that time accelerates. I'm talking to you like I'm Yoda.
Accelerates, it does. You'll see.
Yeah. It
no, it does.
Things
yeah.
speed up. So I feel like you finished the Harry Potter films. Like to me, that feels like about 4 years ago.
Yeah.
But that's because I'm an old fool. And things have accelerated. You could freak a lot of people out if you bought a walker or a cane and started using it.
Yeah.
And if people said, Daniel, what's wrong? You'd be like, oh, it just happens as one gets older. You'd freak people out. It'd
yeah.
be so great.
Well, that's the thing. That may be my actual life one day and I won't need to pretend. And then that'll freak me out and everyone else. Yeah, it is. It's very, it's a very sort of strange thing. And I also feel that the time accelerating thing, even now, that's I'm beginning to feel that. And it seems like it's crazy. I think we finished Potter pretty much exactly 10 years ago now. And that's really, it's crazy. I will also say that when I did go on your show when I was a child, you were so nice and I was so excited. And I'm pretty sure I just peppered you with questions about The Simpsons and I just remember it.
Yeah.
It was one of my only, it was a very nice memory of doing a very crazy thing when you're young.
I'm glad. Yeah. First of all, be really hilarious if your recollection was you came on as a 13-year-old boy and I was incredibly cruel to you.
Well, like, I'm not going to...
Get out of my dressing room! Do you know who the fuck I am?
I mean, some people are kind of like that. That's what I'm saying. Like, not like... It's,
right, we're going to name them in the next segment.
Yeah, definitely
yeah.
not. But, you know, it was... You were nice.
Yeah.
You were not one of them.
That's right. You were a big comedy fan even then, and... It's nice because there is obviously sprinkled throughout the Harry Potter, there's all these comedic moments, but you also so often, and you did it so well, had to play this incredible intensity as things were getting more and more complicated for your character. And then you've spent, you know, a chunk of your adult performing life being really funny. You're a very talented comedian. So it's clear to me that you just had the ear for that. That's not something that comes later in life. You have that or you don't. And the fact that you were kind of obsessed with The Simpsons at such a young age and you were asking me questions about it leads me to believe you just had that early on.
I mean, that's incredibly kind of you to say. Thank you. It's always been like the majority of what I've watched and love watching. I mean, I was I watched The Simpsons, including like I probably listened to the like the director's commentary and the writer's commentary on at least the first like 9-10 seasons of The Simpsons between like, you know, when I was growing up. Yep. And very, very into it. And then, yeah, just a lot of British stuff, like the stuff that we, you know, we were on the Harry Potter set, but me and particularly Matt Lewis, who played Neville, were just constantly quoting. Yep. Like quoting Alan Partridge back to each other.
Yes.
Which is something that's never like that hasn't like not enough, like people obviously know about the like the English Office and that's a huge touchstone in America now, but I do feel like we're trying to explain why Alan Partridge is so brilliant is very, very difficult. And it's just, you just, yeah, I want to recommend it to everyone.
I've adored Steve Coogan's work for years and years, and used to have him on the late night show, and my audience didn't know who he was. And this was, you know, before he's made, you know, a lot of film since, but they didn't know Alan Partridge. And I would have him on the show, and I would say, I don't care if the audience knows him or not. They just, he needs to be heard. We need to get the word out on Alan Partridge. And I look at it and I go, I don't know what's funnier than Steve Coogan as Alan Partridge. Have you watched it, Matt? Have you seen Alan Partridge?
Oh, yeah. I used to have the British import DVDs and a special DVD player.
Just anyone listening right now, if you are just a true fan of comedies, Steve Coogan, Alan Partridge, and I'm sure there's a lot of you listening going, we know, Conan, we know, because we have a lot of comedy fans that listen. And so this will sound like I'm telling you about this amazing new drink called water, but it's interesting to me that when I first met you, you had every right to have sort of a, and I'm sure you've heard this a million times, so we don't have to dwell on it, but to be that young and to get that seminal role and do it so well and be such a part of people's lives, you have every right to be a screwed up person. And I don't know, people must say that to you often.
Yes.
Like, oh, you were the child star of a decade, and now they must expect a certain behavior from you.
Yeah. I definitely was very aware early on, particularly that like, oh, people have very low expectations of what I'm going to be like. Which is in a way is just great because you will kind of, yeah, hopefully always exceed them. But it, I mean, it, I definitely.
The very fact that you're not on crack
right.
Is probably just immediately people are like, hey, high five. Daniel, Dan, good for you.
I remember like I went out with, I was like out with the director and the director of photography on a film I was doing once, and we were like having dinner, and I told some story about my life, like just some like weird story about a thing that had happened to me, and I was telling it in a kind of light, amused way, and we got to the end of it, and the DP just looked at me and went, "How are you not?" Well, he swore, but he was like, "How are you not more messed up?" That is a reaction that like does happen sometimes, and I don't really have like a satisfying answer for people ever. I don't think I have like very like good normal parents who were both supportive. Yep. Of me, but also like asked me in between every film, basically, are you still enjoying this? Are you still having fun? You do know you don't have to do this, and I was always like, I really want to do this. I hate school so much. This is where I would much prefer to be.
No, I'm done being Harry Potter. I want to go to school and get into that geometry I've heard so much about.
You know, I think they were very conscious of like, just as I was conscious of the stereotype of child actors, they were also very conscious of like the cliche of child actor parents and like what that is.
Yes.
And so they didn't want to be those like pushy parents or type either. And so, you know, I had great parents and also parents who like knew a bit about the industry. Like my dad had been a literary agent. They'd both been actors. My mum mm-hmm. had been a casting director. So they were helpful in terms of guiding me as well. But I would also say, you know, the other people that I was like, you know, spent 10 years with and very formative years were the crew on Potter, and they remained like the key positions all remained mostly the same. So they really cared about all the kids, and there was an atmosphere of, we love you, but we're also not gonna, you know, let you become something terrible and monstrous. And so, you know, I really benefit. It was luck, you know, it's incredibly lucky to be with those people.
So the crew basically beat you every day. sticks.
I mean, like, not at all. But like,
come in,
but
bang!
But if I needed it, I trust that they would have. Right. But they were always like, you know, they were never going to let me get cocky and turn into some sort of, you know, arsehole. Can I swear? I'm sort of shying away from swearing, but am I allowed to swear lightly?
I blame. Oh, yeah, oh, okay. You shouldn't. This is this podcast is a filthy, sordid affair.
Okay, fine.
No, but you know, Matt and Sona, they try to keep me humble, but it doesn't work. I'm a raving Caligula-like figure in their lives. They try, and then I think they just have given up at a certain point. There's no stopping. Yeah. Whatever happened to me in childhood was not at all related to fame. I think I was bitten by a radioactive asshole. And then it gave me some asshole superpowers. Don't you think, Sona?
Oh, absolutely. No, yeah, definitely. I was just thinking about the other day when you compared yourself to a pharaoh. And,
okay, well, we don't need to get into that. I just was trying to make the point that I can't be, you know, yes, many people are moving the stones and building the pyramid, and my job is to check it out once in a while and eat some figs.
Yes,
right.
That's all I said. I think that's a reasonable analogy to make. Mm-hmm.
Very reasonable.
Yeah. You know, I was very saddened when Alan Rickman passed because I loved him as an actor, and he was such a big part of the Harry Potter films, and I had the chance to interview him long ago on Late Night. And I remember thinking, I don't think I did a good job with Alan Rickman because I respected him so much. But I was just curious what he was like on set. He's so formidable as an actor that I think I was afraid of him when I was interviewing him. You know, it was fine, but I left thinking, I think he left unimpressed. And so anyway, I thought I'd ask you about it.
I think a lot of us finished working with Alan Rickman and sort of walked out being like, I don't know if I did a good job with Alan Rickman.
So it's not just me.
No, not at all. I mean, definitely for like, it took until like the third or fourth, because he's just so good and so effortlessly good. And you know, so many of the actors that we had on Potter were that. And so we were all spoiled, but Alan also just, in his demeanor and that voice, it was like, particularly as a child, was like vaguely terrifying. But then around the time of the third or fourth film, I think when he could tell that I was really starting to get into it and like really enjoy being on set for other reasons than just, you know, not being in school. He was always very kind. I mean, he saw every bit of theater that I ever did. He at one point he cut short his vacation. I think he'd been like holidaying somewhere. I think he'd been on holiday in Canada, and he came back to New York early so that he could see me in Equus before it closed there. And he like would take me out for dinner and sort of, you know, him and his partner Rima, and he would give advice, but in the least patronizing way, in a very like, you should look into this because it will help build you, or like the next stage you need to try and be at, and you know, knowing what I wanted from it as well. So yeah, he was just, And you know, I think it was very telling that like at his memorial, it was just full of so many people of various ages saying like he was some kind of mentor to me. Like he was very much, you know, somebody that just constantly was. I mean, yeah, he's one of the many people that you just look and try and learn as much from as possible.
I was introduced to him, I think, like a lot of people in Die Hard, where he is, I think, one of the best movie villains of all time. And one of the things that I love so much about that character that just delights me every time I see Die Hard, and anytime it's on, I'll watch it. And I swear to God, I'm watching it for Alan Rickman because I love his performance so much, is that he spent years planning this heist and everything has to go off just perfectly. And then they basically come and tell him, sir, there's a policeman we didn't know about. He's loose. He took the explosives we need that are key to the whole operation, and he's loose in the building and he's killing our men. And most bad guys at that point would be like, shit, let's get out of here. But he's just like, intriguing. And then they come and say, oh, he just killed 15 more people and he's took more of the things we need to make this. And now we're missing 9 of the 10 things we need to make this plan work. And he goes, policeman, eh? Well, we'll just see, won't we? And I'm like, I wish I was like that in life. Conan,
me too.
You know, like, horrible thing just happened. Your house is on fire. I'm intrigued.
No, he is. I mean, that's the thing. He's so funny. That's the thing. He's capable of being incredible, like emotional actor, but also just like him in Galaxy Quest as well. I mean, like he is just so brilliant and dry. And that's what like that was the real kind of. I remember he came to see Equest when we did it in London, and he was very good friends with Richard Griffiths, who's again another of the funniest, amazing people that I've got to work with, and they were friends, and we all went out for dinner afterwards. And suddenly, having spent many years with Alan on set and being like kind of intimidated by him, suddenly I was like at dinner with him, and after like a theater show that I had been in, and he was like telling stories and being like incredibly like funny and self-deprecating, and like, you know, just it was one of those you really feel it was a real treat to be there.
Sona, where else can you go surfing and skiing the same day, huh?
I don't know.
Or check out a world-class art museum and then camp at a dark sky sanctuary that night, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, where else can you hike through redwoods and then get a luxury spa treatment?
Where?
Well, you live there. California. California, Sona. No matter where California. You go across the state, you'll find a way to play. I'm a California resident. So are you. Sona, you are a lifelong California resident.
I'm a lifer. I love this place.
This is a beautiful state. Gorgeous. So many different, wonderful ecosystems in one state. You can hang out by a Palm Springs pool. You know, you can go whale watching. You can go hiking in Yosemite. And then talk about the great cities in California. You get all this amazing food, sushi, whatever you want. They got it in California. Hey, if you can't find it in California, man, you got a problem.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have done that. I made that up on my own. Anyway, I love California. Discover why California is the ultimate playground. Head to visitcalifornia.com to start planning your trip today. Sona, what would you do with $100 billion? Seriously.
Oh, I would buy a country.
Okay. I would buy just a ton of yachts and private jets, and I would duct tape them all together and then just have it go in a circle in the Pacific Ocean.
What?
Yeah. I don't know, just to be a total jerk. Anyway, there is a correct answer.
Oh.
And it's build incredible cities in fantastical locations while competing with your friends to be the biggest tycoon in the world. What do you think of that answer?
That's better than mine.
Yep, and mine, which you can do with Monopoly Go, the hit mobile game that's so much fun, it's been downloaded over 150 million times. It's the fun of classic Monopoly on the go, anytime, anywhere, endless new surprises like tons of boards and crazy mini games. You can team up with your chums on community chess and tournaments to get big money, or you can go after their fortune changing rent on your properties or even pulling a bank heist on them. So much fun. It's incredible. So start building up your billions today. Go download Monopoly Go, now free on the App Store and Google Play. Can't believe we've been doing this podcast for 5 years. Lots changed. But you know what? There's also things that haven't changed.
Mm.
Great taste of Miller Lite. Yeah. Hasn't changed. It was the original light beer. And to this day, for my money, it's still the best one.
It's good.
I'll fight anyone that disagrees.
Will you?
Well, not with my... I'll have someone fight for me. Miller Lite has more of the taste you want, less of the stuff you don't.
Yeah.
I like great taste, clean finish, simple ingredients.
Yeah.
You know, some of these beers, they put caramel in there.
Ugh.
Corn cobs.
Oh.
Chicory. I don't want that. I like the simple taste of Miller Lite. Classic. Undebatable quality, great taste, only 96 calories.
That's good.
It's the beer that strips away everything you don't need, holds on to what matters most. A light beer that tastes, hello, like beer.
Yeah, not like water that's just kind of beery.
Yeah, exactly. I don't like that. That's a bad name for a beer, too. Water that's mostly beery. The original light beer since 1975. Times change, but you can always enjoy the great taste of Miller Lite. Tastes like Miller time. I came up with that.
Oh.
I should get paid. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Conan. Or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces.
You bring up Equus, your theater work, and I do applaud you because I think you've done such a good job of building your career. I mean, obviously, you come off all these Harry Potter films, and you were, you know, I credit you. You were very smart about building yourself as an actor and choosing who you work with. You may or may not know, I'm a massive fan of Simon Rich's.
Oh, yeah.
He's
a massive fan of yours.
And he's the real deal. And he is, I read his prose. I read his short stories that he's done for The New Yorker and his collection stories. And he's, you know, I think, oh, this is up there. This is classic American comedic prose, you know, and it just makes me. And so the fact that you guys found each other for Miracle Workers, that just feels like you have such a good ear for who to work with, who to be with, what to do next, you know, and obviously working with Steve Buscemi. And yeah. So I don't know. I'm very it's funny because I met you when you were 13. I sometimes have this weird feeling of I'm very proud of Daniel.
No, thank you.
I'm like, I had nothing to do with you. But sometimes I pretend I'm your father. You know, I think Daniel's handled. Well, Conan, if you're his father, why aren't you around him more? Well, I'm a heavy drinker and I left the family. But maybe I can just pretend I'm your like American, you know, second father. But yeah. I'm very I don't know, very I'm very proud of what you've managed to do and what you've managed to build.
Thank you so much. I mean, I've been very lucky. I think there was a number of people after Potter finished, there was always the idea that, oh, you're going to be typecast as this thing or pigeonholed as this thing or whatever. That I got asked that a lot sort of at the time. But for every person there was that was like, oh, I only see you as Harry Potter, there was somebody out there who was like, oh, I would like the chance to be the director who shows you in a new light. Like, that's like an exciting prospect to somebody as well. So like I got a lot of amazing opportunities straight after, and a couple of people like took chances on me, like the people who put Equus together when I had never done a play before, or, you know, John Krakidis, who let me play like Allen Ginsberg in a film. You know, there's definitely people that like gave me those opportunities, and you just take them sort of as they come and try to make the best of them. And also I was in the position to just do stuff that I liked and not have to do stuff that I've generally stuck to that. Like, I think there were a couple of things that I've done that I was like, have maybe slightly done for the wrong reasons of like thinking it was a smart thing to do rather than actually like want and like loving it. And the thing I mainly took away from them was like, oh, you were in the position of only having to do things you love. So for as long as you're in that position, you might as well just stick to that. And then, I mean, Miracle Workers and Simon, I read his the book, What in God's Name, that the first season of the show was based on.
Yep.
And I was just like, I think making somebody laugh out loud from a novel or from a short story is such an incredible skill. And they're incredibly funny, and there's real like darkness and cynicism to the humor, but there's also a real warmth and kindness to it that I really enjoy. And so the chance to like spend several seasons in that kind of world is it's a dream job.
Well, I also love what I love about Miracle Workers too, which I think is such a smart move, is that it resets after every season. So you can go from, you can explore the Middle Ages, but you wisely, I think, know, well, we can't stay there.
Right.
You know, I mean, you would love to, but you get all the best pulp out of that. And then you can reset and say, okay, now we're on the Oregon Trail and completely reset, which I think is kind of, I guess, what Blackadder, another show that Rowan Atkinson, who I was obsessed with in the 80s, and I was obsessed with Blackadder, and I just thought the level of the writing and performing on this show at the time, I thought that's so much better than anything we have
Blackadder
in America.
Yeah, Blackadder is incredible. And that's the only thing I can think to compare it to, either in terms of the sort of jumping around in different historical periods, which is sort of where we've now got to with Miracle Workers over the last couple of seasons. But yeah, I mean, one of the things Simon said before we did the first season was none of us had an interest in doing something that was a story that you just had to keep going infinitely. You know, Simon wanted to write something with a beginning, middle, and end, as the novel had been, rather than trying to make something that was kind of open-ended. And for me, that like fit my purposes exactly, because I just, you know, I played Harry Potter for 10 years, so I like the idea of not playing one character for a long time again, if possible.
Well, I'll tell you, I've been playing Conan O'Brien
you're very
for
good,
28 haven't you? Years. Thank you. Well, apparently no one else wants to do it. They actually had an open casting call and people said no. No one wanted to wear that wig, have that name, talk like that and act like that. So remember that, Sona? We had a huge cattle call.
Oh, it was huge.
Who wants to play Conan?
And cast a wide net. Yeah, no, we offered, one bit.
Offered millions of dollars. No, yep, one wanted it.
No one.
But, you know, it makes me curious. Like, there must be stuff out there, like a wild swing that you'd love to take someday, whether it's in action or some kind of movie that no, like disaster movies. I heard that you might, that was one of your fantasies, was to be in an insane disaster movie.
I mean, yeah, I do. I love a massive, like either monster B movie or disaster movie of some kind. I just watched, this is relevant to nothing. It's not really a disaster movie, but I watched Congo the other day for the first time. Uh-huh. And it was, because it was on lots of lists of like, sort of like not great films or whatever. And I enjoy films that are generally not either. Congo is fantastic. I will stand up for that film.
I went to college with the girl that played the main gorilla.
Amy?
What?
Yeah.
There were two actresses that I did also look this up because I was like, who's in the gorilla costume? They're doing fantastic work.
Laureen No.
Yeah.
You went to college with her?
Yeah. And she got pulled away from the theater department and she just disappeared. And when she came back, she was like, I was a gorilla in this big movie.
In that telling, it sounds like she was abducted to be in the
costume. Yeah. She might have been. She might have been. I understand that's how
how it happens. Yeah.
Yeah. You tell me.
I mean, didn't they just take you out of school one day, Daniel, and not tell you what was going on? And then 10 years later, they released you?
Yeah. You're either getting checked for lice or put in a major motion picture.
So yeah, you watch Congo and
yeah, but I do. I would love that. There's no, like, in terms of like wild swing, it's always hard to say. Like, I would definitely be in a disaster movie if I loved the script and like that sounded fun, like 100%. I think that like in terms of like an actual like thing I would consider a big swing that I know I do want to do, like I want to like write and direct and then do that at some point, and that feels like way riskier because there's, you know, no evidence that I'll be good in that other than just like a feeling of I've been here a while, I should be.
Well, but the other thing too is you have my one advice. I always think, what would be the one piece of advice I would give to young people if anyone was listening? And sometimes I think it is give things a shot because you have less to lose than you think you do. We're so afraid of the humiliation, and it is painful to fail at things. It's very painful, but if you can set that aside and go for it, it really does. Usually, even if the project doesn't work out the way you wanted it to, I don't think you ever regret giving it a shot. You don't. No, so why not?
That's hopefully on the cards in the next few years. But yeah, and as you say, failure is in like, yeah, there's always something to learn from it and feel. I mean, I'm somebody who's like, a lot of other people would be like, you haven't experienced much failure. But I look at some of my acting and I go, there's some failure in that acting. But like particularly, you know, when I was like young. So I think, yeah, it's definitely something that you're always like gonna glean something from.
Well, and you're clearly beating around the bush, but I will be the star of that movie you write and direct.
Oh my God.
Thank you. That's really good.
I accept. Daniel, I accept.
It's really, really nice of you to intuit that.
I've never acted, but I too have to just give things a try. So you heard it here, ladies and gentlemen.
You're in. You're joking around, but your agent or somebody's going to be really angry when I call them later and said he said, and I haven't recorded.
I don't have one anymore.
Okay.
They left me. They said not enough was coming in. It could be me or Ed Sheeran, you know, just one of us. We're pretty much the same person. You know, it's so funny because I was thinking about this. Like, would you want if they said, oh, just for fun, and they said, Daniel, do you want to be in a Dan, do you want to be in a Fast and Furious 10? Because those movies, I have such a fascination with those films.
Yeah.
And there's a new one coming out now, and I am going to go to the movie theater and watch it because the way you have an obsession with Congo, I have an obsession with the Fast and Furious franchise, starting with like the fourth or fifth one, when they completely lost their minds.
Yeah. But they're great.
They completely lost their minds. Whoever's behind that thing went insane, and they just keep making more and more money.
This will be 10 coming out, the next one, right?
This will be nine, I think, the one that's coming out. By the time people hear this, yeah, 9 will have been out.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, that is incredible. And like, they are, but I would love to be in a movie like that, but like only if in that case, in the instance of those films, if I could have like a non-driving part, that'd be great.
There's no such thing.
Right, well.
there's no such thing as a non-driving part.
That's the thing. Driving on camera is maybe the part of my job I hate the most. I barely drive in real life. I have a license, but I really am not good at it and don't really do it. And so like trying to hit a mark in a car is my most hated part of it. But so some nice, I could do some of the admin. I'm sure they must need a lot of that. There must be an administration guy there.
You're the one doing everyone's dental plan.
You know, somebody's
you're the one filling out forms for Vin Diesel and the rest of the family. Yeah. I just love that no matter what the problem they're presented with, it always involves 7 cars. And so the problem could be, well, there's someone's embezzling at this firm. And so what we should probably do is go in and look at the books and do an audit and then prove that this person embezzled and then arrest them. What do you guys think? We have a better idea. It involves 7 cars all crashing into the building at the same time.
But this is the same problem you have with chips.
It's the same obsession I have with chips, which is every problem, every crime must be committed on a dreary highway in Los Angeles. And the only way to, you know, if it's an art forgery, the art forgers are doing the forging in the back of a semi truck that's going 65 miles an hour on the 405 freeway. And the only people to stop them are 2 guys on motorcycles. But I want you in that franchise.
Yeah, and that's when my guy would come in. There's the admin guy. When they have that embezzlement case, they'd be planning the 7 cars, and I'd be there going, guys, this is all unnecessary. This is exactly what I do.
I checked. We need permits if we're going to shut down the streets. And it's a 2-month lead time for these permits. So what I suggest is we hire an accountant. We go in and we do some forensic accounting.
Yeah.
And then they just tape your mouth shut and stick you in a barrel.
Hey, if the producer franchise are interested, I'm into it.
Let me ask you about your podcast, which is called You Do It With Your Friend David Holmes.
Oh, thank you so much for mentioning that.
Oh yeah, of course. but it's kind of fascinating, and your and David's relationship is kind of fascinating because this is a podcast you do with the guy who was your stunt double. Is that right? For many years?
Yeah. So Davey was my stunt double on Potter. The podcast is called Cunning Stunts. And it's a, which, you know, I'm sorry to anybody who has to say that instead of me.
Just don't have a few drinks and try to say it.
Yeah.
I had a few drinks and tried to announce it into a microphone in front of 800 people. And I was arrested.
Basically, Davey was kind of like an older brother figure to me in many ways. Like when we met, I was, I guess, 10 or 11, and he was about 17, which at the time is like a mass. Now we're just 2 men in our 30s.
Massive
but
gap.
Like at the time is huge. And he was my stunt double through films 1 through 6. And then prior to the start of the 7th film filming, he was testing a stunt and he it went very, very badly wrong, and he became paralyzed. And he is still. So to watch this person who was like this incredible figure in my life, but was like a real, he was like a gymnast before. His physicality was like a huge part of his identity. And to watch that person then like have to like rediscover who they are from the ground up at that point, has just been like, he's one of the most incredible people I know. And we're trying to do something hopefully bigger, just about kind of Dave's story at some point. But we've done this podcast, which is basically Dave and occasionally me jumping in really badly. I hate listening to myself on this. I don't know how you guys do it. But like, I'm not a good interviewer. Dave actually has become like a really good interviewer through it. But talking to other stunt guys and girls about their experiences in the industry and you know, kind of how they came into it and what it's like to do stunts on a film. And I like to think that because it's Dave interviewing people, there is like a very kind of casual nature to the conversation where people are telling some like really, really cool stories.
I have so much respect for stunt people and in the last 28 years of doing a lot of physical comedy, I'm always amazed that someone's just about to throw me through a window and then they say, cut. And this guy who's exactly my height with a ridiculous pompadour wig strapped to his head, yeah. which is actually more dangerous than any stunt he's going to do, is then thrown through the window. There's a part of me that is secretly wants to do it because I grew up with a lot of brothers and we were constantly actually throwing each other out of windows. And so there's always part of me that wants to do it. And then I see what they're doing and how much – what a, you know, craft and how and what's involved. And my hat's off and what your friend David went through just sounds terrible, but it sounds like he has risen to the challenge of remaking his life in light of something like that, which is just horrific.
Yeah. In a way that I'm not sure I know anyone else that could, like, yeah, he's incredible. And yeah, what a lot of people, I think the fact that we call them stunts, like hides what they do with a layer of mystery where people are like, you know, there is no like stunt to falling down a flight of stairs. You just fall down a flight of stairs. You do it and there are people that can do it like really well and you'll have pads on sometimes, but like, and you can protect yourself a bit, but ultimately you're still doing the thing. Like there's no, you know, when there was a thing I did on a job once where somebody it was like picked up on a wire and they went through the air and then something redirected them and they had to like hit the side of a tree and it was just a real tree and he hit it like at speed several times. You know, they are just incredibly tough and they love it and you definitely see directors sometimes forget that stunt people are people and it's like, great, that was really good, let's have another. You're like, well, if it's good, don't make them do it again. That's, you wouldn't want to do that more times than was necessary. But yeah, stunts are also like if you have occasion to hang out on a film set for any reason, stunts are generally a really cool, fun department to like try and embed with and hang out with. They're generally really awesome people.
Yeah, I immediately always size them up as being much better and more impressive than me.
The thing you said about wanting to try and have a go at it. I recently had a moment of that on Miracle Workers. There's a scene where my character like runs and jumps off like a conveniently placed stump of a tree and jumps from that onto his horse. And I watched the rehearsal and I was like, I reckon I can have a go at that. And it was like, I'm going to make my excuses now. It was slightly uphill, so I kind of underestimated how hard I'd have to jump. But I was like, I said to the stunt coordinator, can I try that? And he was like, yeah, you absolutely can. But like, don't worry, Gatlin, who was my stunt double on it, is also like here. And I was like, I was like, I'll probably fail, but like, I'd like to have a go. Secretly thinking, you're not going to fail. You're going to make this jump. And then I did it. Kind of, but like it was very messy and ugly. And then I watched Gatlin do it on the next take and just like bound off this tree stump and perfectly land on top of the horse. And I was like, yeah, why would I want to subject people to me struggling?
The horse turned to you and said, that's how it's done.
Exactly. It was really, it was like,
I'm sorry, there's a talking horse who then threw shade at Daniel Radcliffe. Yeah, yeah. That's what's happening in my mind.
It was pure hubris.
Humiliated by a horse. Daniel, I have to say, I was driving over here to the studio and really looking forward to talking to you because, as I said, for no reason whatsoever, I'm proud of you in this paternal way. That's that lovely. I have not earned, but I really am. You're an exceptionally talented and nice fellow, and I'm very happy and impressed with what you've managed to do, because there are many people who would think the Harry Potter franchise is a lottery ticket, and we both know all too well that those are situations that are they give and they take, and they're very fraught, And it takes an exceptional person to navigate that. And you are that person. So
wow.
Thank you. Thank you so much for talking to me.
No, thank you so much for having me on. It's lovely to every other time we've done this, it's been like on your show, which has been lovely, but very quick. So it's lovely to have like longer to chat. This has been awesome.
Yeah, it's it goes one of two ways. People either learn that they really enjoy talking to me, or they quickly realize, no, 6 minutes is about all I can think. Hey, Daniels, best of luck with this project that you're working on now. And I look forward to running into you soon in the near future.
Yeah.
And keep at it. And my best to Mr. Rich.
Yeah, he did the first few series and they were amazing. But I should shout out Dan Merck and Robert Patnick, who did this season, and they're amazing.
Yes.
But yes, I feel like everything else we said about it stands. Like the first two, you know, it still all applies.
Hey, thanks so much. And I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you very much, Conan. Thank you, everybody.
Nothing brings a family together like a large two-topping pizza. It's the perfect way to celebrate any occasion. This happens all the time at my house.
Yeah.
I say, kids, let's get together. Your father wants to tell you stories of his childhood. Nobody comes running, all right? But guess what? When I get one of those two large two-topping pizzas at Domino's, suddenly everybody wants to hear from Daddy. At Domino's, you can carry out large two-topping pizzas for just $6.99 for this week only. No limit on number of pizzas. You know, what toppings do you like? I like pepperoni.
I like pepperoni. I like olive. I like bell pepper. I like mushrooms. I know you don't like mushrooms. I like mushrooms.
Yeah. Well, you didn't have to out me as a no mushroom guy, but okay. Domino's Pizza. That's the way to get the whole family together. And this is a great deal. Visit Domino's.com or use the app to order your large two-topping pizzas for $6.99 each. Carry out only. You must ask for this limited time offer. Valid 4/22 through 4/28. Tax may apply. Prices, participation, and charges may vary. Okay, you freaks, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, multiple systems, and delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep, right,
yeah,
guys?
That's what I think about all the time.
That's all I think about. I'm a real whiz. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. It just does.
Yeah.
Words.
So to reduce, what's that?
Words.
Yeah, exactly. That helped. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. You knew where I was going with this, right?
Yeah, I do. Please tell us what NetSuite is.
I shall. NetSuite's the number one cloud financial system. It brings accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one, count them, one platform and one source of truth.
Yeah.
By bringing all your major business processes into one platform, you will not only improve efficiency, you'll also cut costs. Yep. NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessible from anywhere. That's why they call it the cloud. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. If you're not doing it, you should too. Hey, so do the math. That sounds aggressive. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Wow. Head to netsuite.com/Conan. netsuite.com/Conan. One more time if you weren't listening. netsuite.com/Conan.
All right, this is a big moment on the podcast because, as we know, Sona's about to give birth to twins, which means that things are going to change around here and there's a bit of a transition in process. Conan, Sona, we also are welcoming someone very special here today, David Hopping. David, welcome.
Thank you.
David Hopping, let me explain, is going to be filling in for Sona. Mm-hmm. David's been with the show. How many years have you been on the show, David?
Around four years.
Okay, 4 years.
Yeah. Almost five, 2016.
Okay. You know, one thing we do on this podcast is we keep the answers kind of terse.
Oh.
So no one cares if it's four or five.
Yeah.
Someone might.
No.
One person. No, mom cares.
Even your mom is like, whatever, David, move on.
She's so happy.
She's at home.
She's so glad I'm not in Illinois.
She's at home saying, that's so David. Four. No, five. No, wait, four. No, four and a half.
David, you've been on the podcast before. Remember in the first quarantine episode? So listeners might know, David. Yeah.
David, you have taken on a very sacred role. Sona, many people say, is the beating heart of the podcast, Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. I am the mind. Sona is the heart. And Matt Gourley is There's an organ behind the spleen that we don't know what it does. It's more, some people think it's just a piece of cartilage, but.
Well, people are saying I'm the libido of the podcast.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah, I suppose.
Sexual energy.
You're the sexual energy that.
I mean, just look at me. I'm in a plaid shirt.
In a plaid shirt. Yep. You are Ross sex appeal. But this is an important time for us because while you're here, Sona, you need to help David understand what his role on the podcast is going to be. Now, he has worked at the show, as he said, for 5 years.
Yeah.
But he may not know what his job is here, and it would probably make sense for you to try and walk him through it.
So, wait.
Yeah, we should be clear.
Taking over for me on the podcast as well? I just thought as your
assistant. Oh,
this is breaking news.
What are you doing?
Well, I assumed that if you're leaving, we need another person here. It's, you know, there's got to be three of us.
Okay. All right. No, that's cool. I think David probably wanted to know that as well.
And now I do.
So that would have been nice information for
welcome,
David to know. So
yeah, I'm just assuming we need a third voice. There is no the strongest shape is the triangle.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay.
I don't even think that's true. I just said that.
I'm with you though. Just so long as it doesn't have to be you and me awkwardly trying to get through an intro. It'd be nice to have yeah. David there.
Well, yeah. The first thing, David, is communication is lacking on this entire.
Oh, you weren't aware that David's going to be filling in your role in the podcast.
Anyone was aware until right now.
David,
am I wrong?
No idea.
Hey, wait a minute. Maybe I'm wrong. I just assumed that was a good idea. Adam, what's happening here? Am I right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good idea. But the conversation was going to be about David kind of filling in persona as your assistant and getting up to speed.
I thought we were permanently replacing Sona.
Permanently?
Well, yeah. You're a mom now. You can't be doing this shit.
What are you talking about?
I assumed that we were getting rid of Sona. She's out the door and we're bringing David in.
Oh, my God. David, run away as fast as you possibly can.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to make a lot of money just gabbing on the radio occasionally with a comedic legend. Who needs that?
Come on. I'm not a comedic legend.
You are. You are considered a comedic legend.
Weren't you a voice at Disneyland?
Yeah.
I was a trash can.
There you go.
And you know what? To me, you'll always be a trash can.
Oh, that's
thanks,
sweet.
Buddy.
Thank you. No, I don't. I just think he's here today. And I'm going to be honest with you. I think if he hits it out of the park today, who knows? This could be it. This could be your farewell episode, Sona.
Oh, God.
So just, you've got to, you got to be on your toes today, Sona. Okay?
What the hell is this?
I like to pit people against each other. That's what Lauren did at Saturday Night Live.
Oh, come on.
And it made that show hum. You know, did you see that your rival got a sketch on? Are you feeling nervous, Conan? Oh, look, rival. Now Conan's doing well. You know, that's the kind of thing that makes that show so superlative. And that's what I want to do here. I want to pit you and is it David?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to pit you and David against each other and see, and that's going to make both of you fantastic.
You can't. You know why? Because we've already established David and I are a team. We're allies and you are the enemy. So mm-hmm. This is how we approach this entire thing.
You stand to gain. You stand to gain here, David. This could really change your life.
Oh, wow.
How old are you?
29.
You're 29 years old.
Yeah.
I don't know what your income is, but
you're his boss.
Do you want to give me more while we're here?
Look, does the Pharaoh know every detail of the pyramid's construction? No.
God.
He visits the pyramid every couple of months and eats a fig and takes a look at it and says, looks okay to me. And then tens of thousands of people with very short life expectancies move the stones around.
Oh, God.
That's sort of my role.
I'm the
Pharaoh.
Got it.
So I don't know exactly what you make, but I imagine if you became a regular part of the podcast, you would, bump up quite a bit in your life.
So can I get this straight? I'm sorry. Real quick. Are you firing me because I'm having babies?
I looked into this.
Okay.
I looked into this, Sona.
Yes.
And trust me, I looked into it. I got so many lawyers involved. No.
Okay.
I am not firing you because you're having babies, because I'm told that plan that I had is not legal and is morally wrong.
Okay, good.
So that's not happening.
Okay, you had to be told that is morally wrong. Okay.
It doesn't, either way, I think we've come to a good conclusion for you, which is that you will be welcome back with open arms as soon as you're ready to return here.
Oh, okay.
At a reduced salary.
No.
Hey, there it is.
I'm sorry, but I don't think there's a law against that.
There is.
Oh, right. They did tell me that.
Yeah, there is. There absolutely is.
You know what? I keep forgetting what Dolores told me. Yes, that's right.
Yes.
Same salary or probably even higher.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Cool. I have my plots and schemes, and then it's very good. They always bring lawyers in to explain to me that I can't do that, that that hasn't been – most of what I want to do to the staff hasn't been legal since 1840. 1840 in England and 1978 in America. So
a lot of this seems like common sense though. Mm-hmm. But it does
You'd
sound-
think, but it really isn't, as I'm proof. But let's start with then. Let's say that he's not replacing you on the podcast. I was trying to pull a fast one.
Okay.
And seeing if I could, maybe you just go, oh, good for you. And then I would have audio record of you resigning. That didn't happen.
What? You were trying to bait me into quitting.
I just thought maybe it would happen and we would have what my lawyer said was proof.
I also think there would be an uproar if Sona permanently left the podcast.
Oh, yeah. If Sona goes, I go for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's nice. Uh-huh.
You're going to go to one of your other hit podcasts, Me and Mr. Quibbles? Hey. Ships in a bottle talk.
Matt, should just go on maternity leave with me.
Of course, I'm being funny. I have to point that out because that's what really funny people do. But my point is this. Matt Gourley is a very successful podcaster. Long before I stumbled onto this scene, I make these jokes, but they're absurd and they're wrong. I denigrate you for no reason, Matt. And I should be honoring you instead. Sona, of course, you're always welcome here. You are the heart, as I said, of the podcast.
Oh, that's nice.
And had you voluntarily been tricked into resigning, I might have taken you up on it, but you didn't. And so you will be returning soon, I hope. I wasted a lot of time on this segment trying to trick Sona into resigning. It didn't work.
Yeah.
But now we get to the meat of the issue, which is Sona is going to explain her duties. And this is going to be hilarious because I think she has no idea what a professional assistant does. So tune in to that wonderful piece of chicanery and tomfoolery on the next episode of Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend.
Wow, this is exciting. This is our first ever segment cliffhanger.
What a cliffhanger. This is instead of who shot JR or what does Rosebud mean? Our version of that on this show is Sona explains what an assistant does to a relative stranger.
It gives me time to figure it out.
Yeah.
We'll see you next week. Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. With Conan O'Brien, Sona Movsesian, and Matt Gourley. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Joanna Solitaroff, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Take it away, Jimmy. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. Engineering by Will Becton. Talent booking by Paula Davis, Gina Batista, and Britt Kahn. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review read on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It too could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded.
This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Did you know that the bold, smooth taste of Dunkin' cold coffee can be brewed in your Keurig coffee maker and enjoyed at home? Dunkin's cold K-Cup pods were crafted to be brewed hot and enjoyed cold. And of course, they're packed with the Dunkin' flavor you crave. Brew over ice and sip in seconds. Because the home with Dunkin' is where you want to be.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.